welcome. Today, this is the time for the I Love Real Estate Success Story Show. This is Michael here from Knowledge Source. Thank you so much for joining us. If you haven't already joined this session today before, what we're going to do is we're going to unravel and have a bit of a look at one of Dimpner's students, one of Dimpner's amazing students who've actually gone out and done some pretty incredible things. And then have a look at how their journey has traveled and where they're at and how their situation has changed. Now, today is going to be very, very different because what we've got with this student today is that he's not in the normal age group of what you would expect from a real estate investor. He has started at a very, very early age, done some quite incredible things when most people his similar age are still at uni. This is going to be really insightful, really interesting, and I would like to get it off and starting very, very soon. So the main kind of focus of what we're doing at the moment is focusing on success. What is it about students and what they have done to be able to inspire you, encourage you, give you a bit of an insight so that you can take something from these sessions and actually kind of get a little bit of a kick along and say, you know what, I can get out there and do this myself. So let's get rock and rolling and introduce Stuart Baker. Stuart Baker, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Mate, I'm very well, very well. Thank you so much for taking out the time to join us today for this chat and this of insight into what you've been doing.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. And thanks so much for the comments as well. If you can type in there and let us know where you're tuning in from, always good to see. Okay, so look, what the best thing to do is let's just get it off and starting and give us a bit of an insight, because you've got a very different introduction to the I Love Real Estate community, haven't you? It's not like, you know, a lot of other students that have joined. Can you give us a bit of insight, like how did you really come across Dimpner in a very different way to everyone else?
Well, my parents were both Platinum members, so Mark and Amanda Baker. So I think I was six, even when I was 16 or something, like they'd be watching Dimpner on the TV, and I didn't really pay attention. She kind of, her voice kind of annoyed me back then. I had that sort of level of exposure to, and you still learn some things just without realizing you're learning. But that was sort of where I first came across Dimpner, but it wasn't until quite a bit later, 5 or 6 years later, where I went to the first one-day seminar that I've been to, the first one-dayer. That's really where sort of the whole journey started for me.
Yeah. And so, look, so for those of you who don't know, Mark and Amanda Baker, they have been students of Dimpner's for many years. They have been Platinum students. And for anyone who wants to have any understanding of rooming houses, Mark and Amanda, they know their stuff hugely. And they've been very, very much involved in the community. And, of course, Stuart, that's your parents, hey?
Yeah.
So interesting way to come about it. But it I've got to say, it's interesting to say that when you came in, and at that age as well, like probably, kids a similar age, you're not really interested in what your parents are doing.
No, definitely not. I mean, and so obviously back then being 16, that's way out of what I was thinking about. When I first went to the one-day seminar, I was probably 22. But even then, there wasn't really much interest, and I was quite aware of what my parents were doing to some degree. I wasn't really across what the numbers were like and things like that. There's no interest from, and they would try and sell me on property, and, they just couldn't.
sounds like a well-known kind of, parent-son relationship. Parents say, do this, and he says, no way. Don't tell me what to do.
Exactly. So, yeah. I wasn't talking to the Dimpner one day event. She sold me on property
quickly. Yeah, tell me, Pat. So what was that like for you? I mean, like, you know, you obviously your parents are kind of telling you about this and saying, hey, you know, you should get involved. And you're like, nah, look, just...
Well, yeah, like, they had to force me to go, really. Like, they dragged me there.
They dragged you there, okay.
I definitely am glad I went there, because I'm not sure what I'd be doing now if I didn't go.
Interesting.
It was a very pivotal moment of my life, I'd say.
Yeah, because there was a couple other things happening as well. For those of you who may not be aware, Dipna did run a challenge, you know, with the kids as well. The Property Games Kids is what they called it. And she teamed up with Kevin Dudney, and they got, it was over a couple of years actually, and they did two kind of evolutions of it. And it really came about when Dipna's daughter, Sam, was at an age where she was going to be investing in property. And instead of Dipna saying, I'm going to, you know, hand things over to you easily, it's like, you're going to earn it. So we're going to do a challenge, and we're going to get other, you know, members of the Isle of Real Estate community in a similar age group, 18 to 22, and challenge each other and see what you can accomplish in a period of time, given the right education and training. So it's kind of like everyone else is involved with Dipna's training, just like you are, but it was a challenge that went for a short period of time, and then they did it again. And Stuart, you applied, but you just missed out, didn't you, of becoming one of the Property Games ones?
Yeah, that's right. So I applied, and again, it was really more just kind of suggestion from my parents to apply. I didn't really. I was definitely interested. Always good to learn new things, but I wasn't. I didn't get in. I wasn't too upset by it. But yeah, that's kind of where it started. I applied for that, didn't get in. I thought I'll go to this one day event. And then afterwards, I told Dipna I'm just going to be doing the Property Games myself. just do it anyway.
Yeah, awesome. And that's exactly what you did too. Because what was the consequence of you coming along to that one day? Because you changed some things like instantly, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was at university studying teaching, and the reason I was doing that, just a lot of my family, specifically on my mum's side, there's a lot of teachers. It's definitely something I think I'd enjoy. But yeah, after that one day event, I went home, and well, the next day I dropped out of university.
So you go and see Dipna, the next day you drop out of uni.
Yeah.
I mean, like, your parents are going to be a different responding, but how did they, what did they say when you did that?
Mum was still, you know, because it was just so sudden, and, you know, she's wanted to make sure that I was sure with what I was doing, but yeah, Dad was, had no issue with it.
Interesting, hey? That's, I got to say, this is probably the difference between your parents wanting you to do something, and then it sounds like you then made the decision, which is very, very different.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah. Awesome. So what happened then? I mean, I will actually, just to clarify, when you made that decision, like, you've got friends, you've got uni friends and so forth. Like, how did they take it? Like, we know how your parents, but what about your friends in your own environment, uni friends and friends from school and so forth?
Yeah, well, it was quite shocking to me at the time. I've since heard that it's pretty common thing that happens when you sort of make major changes like this or major decisions. But I've told all my friends, quite excited, and even some other family members, and it wasn't really much support at all, to be honest. So it's quite shocking. Wow. Obviously they fully understand things, but they're like, oh, are you sure you're making the right choice? Or maybe you should just, a few more years left of your course. I think I had 1 year left, to be honest. Maybe just finish that off first, then look into this, and, you know, that sort of feedback. But there's hardly anyone that said, oh, awesome. There's probably one family member that's very entrepreneurial. She was super excited. And that's probably about it. Like, in terms of friends, not much support at all.
Wow. That must have been pretty tough, actually, because it's like, being in uni at that kind of age, you know, you would have been catching up, you know, going out and, you know, having a good time, as you do at that age.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely did. I did continue to some degree for probably another year after, after this sort of period, but it did sort of, I guess, fizzle out where just, I guess, we weren't aligned. We didn't have very similar goals or different mindsets and things like that. So that happens, I guess. It definitely was tough to some degree, but I think it was worth it.
Wow. All right. Well, yeah. Tough one, because you're kind of like a little bit on your own, on your own venture. Yeah. So what happened now? Obviously, you've made the decision. What happened then? You're obviously wanting to accomplish something, and there's a stack of, there's no shortage of material with Dipner, as everyone knows. So what did you get yourself involved with, and what did you start learning and researching into?
Well, I mean, I guess the way I sort of saw it was, I've dropped out of uni, but you can still learn. You don't need to go to uni to learn. So I just really just dove into pretty much everything I could, that, of all the material that I could. I just tried, my kind of goal was to sort of get a general understanding of as much as I could. And then from there, I can narrow it down to what specific strategy I think would work better. That was sort of the mindset behind it.
Yeah. And just one other thing as well, because like when you went to that one day and you got a bit of an insight, you kind of like had an expectation that when you become a teacher, because that's what you were studying, you'd come out with a certain wage.
Yeah, I think at the time, I'm not sure what it is now, I think at the time it was probably starting off at like $65,000 a year. Sort of fallback. At that one day where Dibner was going through real examples of students, the sort of stuff they were getting, they'd do one deal and they'd probably get double that in from one deal.
It's a little bit easier than a year of teaching is what you thought, yeah?
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Interesting. So what then changed for you? Obviously, you're looking into that, and you've kind of looking at the smorgasbord of strategies that are available. What really kind of triggered for you? Because you became very clear on what you want to do. You did kind of have a look at what was available, and you really kind of got clarity on that. So how did that process work for you to get clear on what you want? Because the thing that Dimna says is you've got a cookie cutter strategy, and everyone has their own version of what is a cookie cutter strategy. And it's like, well, you've got to find a strategy that really aligns with you, that suits your portfolio, that's going to give you the results. It fits a whole lot of things. And every student seems to find that cookie cutter and go, yeah, you know what? This one suits me. And I think that you kind of rolled into finding your cookie cutter strategy as well, didn't you?
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. She does talk about finding that cookie cutter. She did talk about cookie cutter sort of deals, and to me it made a lot more sense than trying to be an expert at renovations plus an expert at development subdivisions. Like, to me it made a lot more sense to try and find a niche. There's one student in particular, or a couple in particular, that Dibner was promoting. Talking about their success and things like that, and they were doing a lot of property development, more specifically like townhouse development. But the numbers they were making were just phenomenal, and I had a lot of interest. It kind of clicked to me that property development seemed pretty cool. Actually building something, you've got something you can show. So that was pretty awesome, and then I thought I could do the development. Plus, combine my parents' knowledge and my knowledge that I had without really knowing I had it in rooming houses. And so, rooming houses is sort of, that's what I'm doing now. So that's what I jumped into was rooming house development, like new build rooming houses, basically.
Yeah. Now, Stuart, you mentioned something really interesting just then. You said you utilized the knowledge you didn't even know you had.
Yeah.
Because I got to say, this is something that's really fascinating, is that we don't often realize the opportunities or things that we can utilize from our own training. And the thing I found with when doing these interviews with students who've been successful is they suddenly kind of find a portion of their lives where they've got this knowledge and they've kind of used it in a different way. You're a little bit different, obviously, because you've, you know, grown up in a family and you know, Mark and Amanda being very much involved with rooming houses. But can you just expand on that? Just let us know a little bit more about how it was that you accessed and utilized info that you didn't even know you had.
Well, I mean, it goes even further than just property, but my parents have been investing in property since before I was born. So there's always been stuff to do with property chat going on. Like, they might not be talking to me, but they might be talking to each other, but you kind of just soak things up without realizing. Even they've had multiple businesses over the years. So actually in high school, I did business. I think it was the best in the class because and just all the terminology, I just already knew it from hearing them talk to each other. Mm-hmm. But I also, for a while, I was doing the property management for a lot of the rooming houses for Dad's company. And so I had that knowledge, again, just what kind of people go into the rooming houses, and just I had a first-hand experience on that side of things. So there's all sorts of things that I knew that, yeah. But with what I didn't realize I knew was just all the property terminology. Just a lot of stuff I didn't realize that I already had an understanding of, because I wasn't really talking to anyone about it in my day-to-day life. But it was in my head.
Yeah. You soak it up. And I got to say, for those, if you're kind of wondering and going, oh, you know, it's different kind of, you know, Stuart's kind of in this environment, you know, with his parents doing so well, have a look at what is available to you. This I Love Real Estate community, if you immerse yourself into it, this is exactly what Dipna has created, an environment and a community where this is this constant conversation about what works, what doesn't work, what you need to look out for, how you can do things successfully, who do you need to lean on when you need help. Everything that's related about becoming successful as a real estate investor, it's all just a constant flow within the I Love Real Estate community. And that will probably give you a similar type of immersion and kind of pick up on that terminology, that understanding, similar to what you know, Stuart's had from his you know, growing up with his family as well.
And I should point out there was definitely a lot that I didn't know. I mean, there's really, I had a meeting with someone, or met up with a property group, and this is probably within that first year, and someone told me that there's sort of, in his mind, there's sort of three property languages, which is like the construction side of things, there's the, I guess, the investing side of things, and there's the accounting and trust setup side of things. So it's sort of for him, this guy had a building background, so he already understood building quite well. Where I guess my knowledge is more the investing side of things, that I sort of had that sort of stuff down, but the other side, the other languages, I knew nearly nothing about.
Yeah. And then, so development was really your item, wasn't it? That was the thing that you went, you know what, that's really what I want to focus on.
Yeah.
And just when you kind of got started in this, we'll expand on, and you're going to share a number of the, you know, the results of some of the deals that you've done as well. Yep. How was it getting started at your age, speaking to people who are probably a little bit older than you, and you're kind of like going, you know, they're probably going, hey, hang on, I'm dealing with someone and they should be at uni. Did you come across that? Was that a difficult thing that came up in conversations when you're moving down the path of development?
I mean, there's really the first year. So when I joined Dipna, there's really that first year that I was just really focused on learning more than anything. But it definitely was even. So I wanted to make sure I had some knowledge and actually understood what I was trying to do and what I was talking about. So, you know, it didn't matter what age. About my age, but if you know what you're talking about, you know what you're talking about, sort of thing.
It definitely did have
a lot of kickback. But at the start, where you just, you know, people don't take you as seriously or whatnot, but you know, that was to be expected, I think.
Yeah. But you kept on going, you pushed through. So Stuart, give us an idea. I think you've got a deal that you would have done first.
So the first one, so and again, because I was still very much learning, so I guess it was a good way to sort of learn on the job, so to speak. So I just did this one job first, and before I jumped into much else, just to kind of see what I could learn from it, what pros and cons were. I can run through the numbers if you'd like.
Yeah, so but what kind of deal was it? Like, you know, because obviously you're looking at development, and also you're in a family that specializes in rooming houses. Yeah. So what was your cookie cutter that you kind of ended up deciding on?
What was it? A rooming house development.
Kind of goes to it's kind of like no surprises there, is it?
But it's a little bit different because there's, without going into too much detail, there's a lot of challenges with rooming houses, and you know, especially in terms of finance. So what we did with this one was we presented it to the bank. So it looked like a standard family home, so we could get residential finance. And then it was then after it was built, it was then able to be retrofitted into a nine-bedroom. So this one's a nine-bedroom, three-bathroom, shared rooming house.
Awesome. And now how did that, now that's an interesting point because you're looking at obviously local council rules and regulations in regards houses and so forth, which is just for anyone who doesn't know, this is a specific area, and it's also different state to state, isn't it?
Oh, very different state to state. I mean, at the moment, there's Victoria and there's Brisbane. That's really about it for rooming. That's worth it, in my opinion.
Okay, great. So how did it stack up? How did the deal stack up for you?
So for this one, so the total cost was, just bear with me, just going to get the numbers up. Total cost was $720,000 thereabouts. Mm-hmm. That was the total development cost. That includes like the furniture and things like that as well. So that was everything there. The total build was, so the total equity requirement, because we got the residential lending on it, was $185,000. That was a total cash requirement. That property is now grossing $106,000. It's netting $30,000 after all, you know, operating costs and mortgage repayments and things like that. It's got a cash on cash return of 16% per annum. So that's that first one.
That's freaking awesome deal. So yeah. So you needed to have $185,000 in equity to get into the deal.
Yeah.
Yep. And then it's returning you 16% cash on cash return, $30,000 per annum cash flow.
Yeah. So not a bad one to start with.
Not a bad one, hey? Yeah. Who would like one of those? Oh, yeah. Who else would like one of those? Awesome deal. Awesome. Yeah. So fantastic first deal, Stuart. Awesome. Yeah.
A lot of the stuff with that deal as well, it was a lot of the learning came from the community, talking to other people within the community as well, and just a few key things with people, Dibner talks about finding your experts. And so that's, you know, a lot of things that back then I was quite green, I suppose, didn't really know. I mean, you mentioned before council stuff.
Yep.
It's different back then as well. It's probably easier now dealing with council now. And back then knowing less and then having it be a bit more difficult, so just had to find the right people to sort of lean on. So I learned a lot there and kind of started to build up the team that I'm still using now.
It's a good point that you need to lean on people, and the community is a great kind of place to lean on people. There's so much expertise in the community.
100%, yeah, 100%.
So you went on to another deal, did another deal, hey? That was a good one. So you kind of like went, yep, let's do that again.
Yeah. So we looked at another one. We actually, I won't mention the suburb, but we had someone come to us. He had two blocks side by side in a regional suburb. Mm-hmm. And he actually had rooming house plans on them. He needed to sell out to get some more cash for another deal. So he's given them to us to try and sell. I wasn't too familiar with the area, so I went up there. I kind of assumed it was going to be like a lot of other regional towns that are sort of near my area, where they're a bit more I guess there's not a lot sort of happening there. They're a bit more lower socio to some degree at least. So I thought that this would just be the same sort of thing. But I went to this regional suburb and I was blown away by how built up it was and you know, how well town planned it was and all that sort of thing. So it got pretty, I guess I was excited about doing something in this area and still am. But I think I kind of reflected on when I was talking to you know, investors or, you know, people, other people. So and that then eventually snowballed into what the next deal, where we did a 9-studio rooming house.
Yeah, awesome. So with the 9-studio, just to clarify as well, this is individual like studio apartments, isn't it, with en suites and so forth? How does that look from the rooming house side of things?
Yeah. So they're still, I mean, they're still technically classed as rooms, but yeah, mm-hmm. Each room has its own. Well, yeah, we call them studios because that's basically what they are. They've got their own cooking or kitchenette sort of facilities. They've got their own en suites. They've got their own outdoor space and their own area as well. So it's very much a much more self-contained model.
And
with a lot of other benefits as well, where we can put soundproofing in between the rooms and really have it so it's set out like a block of apartments.
Nice. And how did this one stack up? Was there any kind of like, you know, it's always interesting to see, Stuart, if there's things that you run into which are obstacles that you overcome in this path. Did you have anything in this deal that kind of came up as difficult things that you need to confront and overcome?
I'll be honest, the first one that I did I think I got pretty lucky with a lot of it. There wasn't really any major issues. The builder was fantastic. So, you know, I kind of assumed, okay, well, that's just going to be, it's going to be this easy forever. This one had a bit more issues. The builder actually went bankrupt near the end of the job. We just had to work around that. That's, everything still worked out fine in the end, which is the main thing, but that was definitely not ideal. And this one being a bit further from where I'm based, it was a bit harder to manage. Mm-hmm. But there's a few more obstacles there. But yeah, it still worked out well in the end. Do you want to go through the numbers or was it?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. I think everyone else wants to hear that as well. They always like it's good to hear the deals, it's also good to hear the numbers. Yeah.
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, so this one was being the 9-studio sort of project, and especially back then where rooming houses weren't anywhere near as known. If you spoke to a lender about rooming houses, I'd say, what's a rooming house? Well, most of them would anyway. So it was a lot harder to get finance for something like this. The client actually cash funded the full deal.
Mm-hmm.
And land was extremely cheap in this area as well. So the numbers might be a bit of a shock. But so the total cost was $750K mm-hmm. for a 9-studio.
Yep.
Just going to quickly check. So that's the total cost cash funded. So that was basically the equity requirement as well.
Yep.
It's now, so that's a gross, it's got a gross income of $117,000 per annum. And it's, you know, net income of $62,000 after all expenses. So because there's no interest costs, it's going to make the net income amount higher. The net return on equity is 8% per annum.
Nice. Again, another one, hey? So yeah. $750 in. And a net return of $62,000 cash flow per annum.
Yep.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And this is you kind of look like you're kind of getting into a bit of a cookie cutter rhythm. Are you getting into that? Is that happening at this point in time?
Definitely. At this point, with that sort of that 9-studio. Well, the thing we're doing, like the first one that we did that was built as a standard home to then be retrofitted, that was just it's a bit more complex. There's a bit more to it. I mean, dealing with the banks and things like that, where this one where you know, someone's paid cash for it, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
So I think so that was my sort of preference. I wanted to cookie cutter doing more of this studio style stuff and more target, ideally cash buyers. I've just had a question come up here. How did I deal with the builder going broke? So that was pretty hectic. I won't go into too much detail with what sort of happened, but it was pretty full on with the builder going bankrupt, and you know, the reason why I went bankrupt. There's a lot of things to sort of manage there. But we just ended up just getting on with it, getting other people to come in, finish the work. It did bring up the build cost a little bit more, but it wasn't a huge amount, and you know, and the client was quite understanding that, you know, we did our due diligence on the builder and everything beforehand, and it was just as unforeseen. So yeah, is what it is.
Absolutely. It's interesting that you just rolled over probably a major issue in such a casual manner, Stuart. were you like pulling your hair out at the time or something? Or were you just like, oh yeah, the builder's going broke, we'll just kind of like roll through this. I was
freaking out at the time. don't get me wrong. That's freaking out. Yeah, especially with it being, you know, it's just your second project and that sort of that major of a thing happen. I'm just glad it worked out how it worked out.
Yeah.
Could have been bad.
Well done on getting it sorted out. Yeah.
And again, it's all you can do, isn't it? You just have to, that's if something comes up, you have to get it sorted. So
yeah, look, this, I've got to say, Stuart, this is a really interesting point. When things come up, when you're committed to a deal, you're committed to doing a deal where it involves somebody else's money and finances and their expectations.
Yeah.
That puts a little bit of pressure on you, doesn't it?
Yeah. Definitely.
Obviously you're getting used to performing under that kind of pressure. Was it difficult to start with?
Oh yeah, definitely difficult. Because you got it sort of, or you're dealing with even with this one, 750K sort of total cost. It's a fair bit of money to kind of be responsible for, I felt like. Like you said, you want to make sure everything's done properly. There definitely was some times where it was quite stressful early on. And all that being said, actually, that what helped with that, dealing with that sort of thing, was again part of what's involved in the Isle of Real Estate. It was all the mindset stuff and the Millionaire Within. That was a good course, a good seminar. Just dealing with all that sort of thing, or just really changing your mindset to I don't know how to kind of word it, just to not be too worried.
Yeah. It's certainly the mindset. It's the Real Estate Millionaire Within is exactly what Dimna calls it. And for those of you who haven't experienced it yet, it really is very much focused on the success mindset that you need to create and develop and enhance in order for you to carry on through situations and circumstances just like Stuart has described. If things get tough, well, what do you do in that circumstance? You don't do you kind of crumble, or do you kind of go, okay, what do I need to do? I need to look at this differently and stay focused on the goal, stay focused on the objective, and be able to come through successfully. So Real Estate Millionaire Within, yes, that's a pretty important one for many, isn't it?
100%. So I've done that twice.
awesome. Now, another deal. Have you got another deal there?
Yeah, so another one. I don't have numbers on this one available, but I can still talk about this one. It was a bit of a different one, so I can still sort of go with it. So the client came to me. She already had she'd already subdivided. So she had how big her house was. Her land she didn't have much land left after she subdivided the backyard off. She maybe had 300 to 400 square meters approximately of land. This was a bit different. She wasn't necessarily wanting to maximize her return or anything like that, and then she could maybe maximum put 4 studios on there, but she ended up going with 3 larger studios just because it'd be a lot easier. So she's managing it herself. It also looks like a normal house from the street, which was a big thing for her. What else was I going to say? easy to manage.
So with this one, just to clarify, Stuart, are you looking at the, was there a house originally on the land?
No, so she subdivided off her backyard, so
okay,
the vacant block sort of behind it. It's sort of like a battle axe.
Okay, so you got a battle axe block, and on that you did the development to build one building, which had three studios.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay.
So in that suburb, she would have maybe gotten for the same sort of, if that was a standard house or a three bedroom house, you might get 50. But instead, she's getting, I think, I can't remember what she's getting. So she's managing it herself. She's getting over 250. The studio now, so 750 plus.
So 250, this is per week, is that right?
Yeah, per studio.
250 per week per studio, 750 a week income.
Yeah, and the advantage of this one as well, because it was only the three studios, we actually got this one through the bank as a residential house. It's a bit unusual, but we still got it through.
Fascinating. So it's kind of, it's lending under a house, three studios, and it's got $750 a week coming in.
More than that now. That's what she was getting a year ago.
What, and out of interest, if you had like a normal three bedroom house, what would that get?
In that particular suburb, probably 350.
So 350, that's like double.
A bit more than double.
More than double. Wow. Fascinating to see, isn't it? Like, you've got an opportunity to be able to do a development on the back of a subdividable block. And instead of building the normal house, three large studios, and you've got double the cash flow. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that was that one. That was a good one. That was a nice and easy project. It was very relaxing.
It was very relaxing. Do you like now get relaxed when you're doing your developments? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, this one in particular, there's no, like, I mean, even the builder was saying he's never had a project go that smoothly, and he's been building for a long time. But it was just one of those things where everything happened exactly as it should. So, yeah, I was very happy with that one. Like, there was even at one point where the builder sent me a picture of the slab. I thought, well, I should go up there and get a video done. And then I think a week later, sent me another picture of the frame up. Okay, well, I won't get a slab video up, I guess.
Happening too quick. Wow, awesome.
Everything was pretty smooth.
Nice, man. Nice. Now, do you have any like a build cost on that one at all, or was it?
Build cost for that one was, I think it was about 400K.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm not sure what the land would have been for her, because obviously she subdivided the backyard. It'd been sitting there for about 2 years, so I can't recall what land would have been at the time.
Nice. Yeah. So that's a nice return, hey, from 400K build costs and land. Yeah. Yep, 750 per week.
Yeah, especially compared to everything else. She wouldn't have to pay any management costs or anything like that because she's self-managing it.
And then... Now Saras has asked what was the time frame on the studios being built, because it sounds like it was pretty quick.
This one was about 6 months on this one in particular. I wouldn't be expecting that in general, but this one was about 6 months.
Wow, awesome. And Eugene, were the rooming houses 1 and 2 done as JVs, or are you still holding on to them? So that was just a question, I think, on the previous ones. Yeah,
so they were done as JVs, where I guess basically there was we were the doing partner, they were the money partner.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, Stuart, have you got any more deals?
Yeah, well, I mean, I should point out as well, during this time frame, like, there's a lot of other stuff happening. There's other sites being acquired. There's other projects where... we're getting the plans and permits and everything sorted, and so there's still a lot. There's a lot of other, I guess, deals happening. There's just no builds, I suppose. So, yeah, and I guess that was something I learned as well. Like, just because there's no build happening doesn't mean there's nothing happening. There's a lot of work before the build starts.
Yeah.
So I should point that out first. So there's that. In terms of build, there's one more build.
Mm-hmm.
go through that. It's probably other ones that I'm maybe not remembering off the top of my head. But this one was another sort of similar to that Nine Studio project. So this is another Nine Studio rooming house.
Yep.
In another regional suburb. And again, another client that was cash funding.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty happy with that. Total costs was $864K.
Mm-hmm.
So equity requirements the same. The returns on that one, $130K per annum. And again, so that net return on, the net cash on cash returns, 8.5% with 73,000 net income.
Awesome. Awesome. So you're netting $73,000 cash flow coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Fantastic deals, man.
And then again, this one was, if you want to talk about challenges on this one, this one was actually finished only late last year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of issues, a lot of restrictions on how many people could be on site. I can't remember the exact restrictions, to be honest, but there was a lot of supply issues and all sorts of things like that. So this one was a lot of work involved in this one, getting it sorted.
Yeah, because
more so during the build was where we had issues with this one. Like all the upfront stuff, it went really smooth. Just during the build, there was all sorts of challenges and kind of having to change time frames all the time change what dates would do things, and this trade you can't do this day, so we'll put him on this day and move this one around, and a lot of work.
A lot of juggling around. And we should probably say as well, these are all in Victoria, yeah?
Yeah, all Victoria, yeah.
Yeah, and so obviously, for those of you who know a little bit about what Victoria's been like with a little bit of restricted on movement and so forth, that tends to affect how a lot of these deals would have actually, timeframes and so forth. So that kind of impact of this deal is pretty much what you're saying. Was that the main cause, or was there other things?
This one was still quick. There's actually some points where we got quite lucky in terms of just when we could get trades on site and things like that. So it actually was actually quite a quick deal. I think it was about for the build, it was like 6-7 months, I think, for the build. So it's still quite quick, but it was very busy work.
Right. Awesome. And if you have a look at what you've kind of accomplished, and what are you talking about in timeframe wise? Since your first deal to where you're at now?
I was 22 turning 23 when I first joined Ultimate.
Yep.
And I'm now 27 turning 28. So four to five years.
So 4 or 5 years, and this is what you've done?
Yeah.
That's, mate, awesome results.
And look, I should point out, there's heaps happening.
And there's heaps more on the go, hey? Things that haven't even completed yet, and things in the pipeline.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So you've just mentioned a couple of difficult kind of obviously things to do with the build and so forth. Is there anything else that you can think of that would be a good one to have a bit of an understanding about how you approach a problem and then resolve it? Clearly, obviously, when you're doing development, there's a lot of issues that come up, and you really have to be on top of them to be able to solve them. You've talked about when the builder went broke.
Yeah.
You've just talked about the difficulties in getting trades on sites and timeframe issues and so forth. Is there anything else that you would want to share about where you've run into something and gone, oh, no, don't want this to happen. It's occurred. And then how you've dealt with it?
Yeah, well, talking about the builder going bankrupt, that was a pretty major one. And then how we've dealt with that is I was actually quite lucky during 2020. This gave us a bit of time to sort of step back and go through the process and reflect on things. With one builder that I've had a relationship with from the start,
mm-hmm.
He wasn't too busy at that time as well, so we could have a fair few chats and line things up. At the time, where he's based, he couldn't really, or he didn't really want to work out like too far from where he was based. He only wanted to sort of build in that little pocket. And we've just kind of worked on a process where he can now build pretty much all of our projects are with him now. So he's doing some that are quite regional. And what that means is, because I know him so well, and you know, I know how he manages things, and there's a lot less stress from my end that he's going to go bankrupt or anything like that. So that's how I've dealt with that side of things. In terms of other challenges, there's been heaps, I suppose. But there's one that was last year, I think, where we had one into council. And it's fairly straightforward in Victoria getting the rooming houses through council, but not with this council. They have did everything they could to obstruct it and delay it. And I got pretty angry with them a few times on the phone. But I guess just how we dealt with it was we just kept pushing on, just sort of,
Good to hear.
Did I cut out?
I think there may have been a little bit of a cut out, but I think we are all good. I'm not too sure. We've had a few little technical things going on this morning before joining on. So I hope everyone can still see us and hear us okay. Certainly on Zoom. Can you guys? It looks like you guys are still there. Well, just up in the chat. Are we still cool? Are we going? That'd be good to know, because I think, yep, Sarasa, you're everywhere. Thanks, Sarasa. You're just much appreciated on that. Okay, cool. Well, look, one of the things I'd really love to find out about is, Stuart, your approach when you do a joint venture, when you team up. I mean, you've got a very unique and different approach, but because you're doing and you're looking after other people's money, how do you approach that? Do you do due diligence? How do you do it? What's your approach, if you can give us a bit of an insight into that?
I guess it can vary from person to person. Just depends how the deal sort of comes about. If it's one where I'm basically doing everything from start to finish, so they've come to me saying I've got this much money, I can do this, I want this sort of an outcome, then it just comes down to, like you said, due diligence. So it's sort of researching what areas would be suitable. So like if they're looking for really maximizing their cash flow, as an example, would go more for a regional suburb, but it's also just finding the right suburb, finding the right site within the suburb, and just kind of getting all the evidence together that this is the feasibility of what I would expect. Here's why I'd expect this much rent, as an example. Here's why I would expect this much as your build costs and all of that sort of thing. So, and then just managing the actual projects ongoing. It's just a matter of communicating throughout the process, and I guess that's how I sort of manage that sort of thing.
Awesome, man, awesome. Look, it's been so insightful with you, Stuart. Thank you so much for taking the time out. I wanted to find out a little bit more about how is your life different now, because when you first started, you go into uni, out there with your uni, your uni mates, and you're having a good time. You dropped out of uni. You just was like, I'm getting into this. 4 or 5 years later, you're now doing, incredible deals with fantastic results. Do you now catch up with your uni friends, and do they kind of go, I should have listened to you back then? Well, how is your life a little bit different now? How can you give us a bit of an insight?
Honestly, it's changed. I don't drink alcohol at all anymore. I don't know. I've got a timer on my phone. I can quickly check. It's probably been close to 3 years since I last drank.
Wow.
At all, like even a drop. So things have changed a lot. I'm not in contact with pretty much all of those friends at the time. There's only really one of them I'd say I'm still friends with, but he's also sort of taken a more he's matured a bit, I suppose, is the right way to put things. I mean, back then, before I started the course, I was quite, pretty directionless, I suppose. Didn't really have a purpose where, now I do. So I guess it's the biggest thing, and it's pretty major, and it's taken, it's a long time to I guess a big part of it's all the mindset stuff. It takes a long time to sort of get that all in place, I feel like. There's a lot to it. So yeah, absolutely. It's different. I don't really catch up with any of with those mates anymore.
Interesting, hey? But I'm sure you've probably kind of like developed some new friends as well.
Yeah, of course.
Within the community, yeah.
Within the community, and within the sort of the industry as well. So there's definitely a lot of friends that I'm more aligned with.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, if you were to catch up, like, let's just say, one of your uni friends kind of like came up to you and it's like, I want to join this kind of community. I can see that what you've done. What would kind of advice would you give to someone like that who is kind of coming to you asking for a bit of advice about how to get started? And that's obviously similar with someone who's newly joined up with the community. What's probably what's your word of wisdom or piece of advice? What would you let them know?
The biggest thing is if they were asking me, should I join it? I'd say yes. I think the biggest thing I'd be, and I've seen it with some other people, is they join it but they don't do anything or they don't really put much effort, because you have to put effort to learn things yourself. You have to actually. Yeah, it's not going to be done for you, I suppose. So if you're going to join it, like to actually do the study, do the research, just do all that sort of thing, and then when you're ready, do some deals. But actually do things. You can't just sit back. So that'd be my advice.
Action, hey.
If you're looking at joining, you're looking for like an easy fix out. I don't think there's going to be anything that's going to. It's going to do that for you. You have to do it yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you have just demonstrated exactly how to do that, to do it yourself.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And again, Dibna did cover that as well. I think it was in the boot camp. But you have to take. Here's all what you can do, but you have to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny you got to say that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is kind of funny to some point, but I do sort of get it as well at the same time.
Yeah. You've got everything there. Dibna provides as much as what she can, information, support, backup. It's got the community, even opportunities to ask questions on the weekly Wednesday webinars. There's so much availability to be able to assist you. It's I kind of look at the I Love Real Estate kind of community and the program as kind of like a success river, and it's flowing. And you've got to kind of get into it to kind of get caught up and get carried along in it a little bit, and you'll find your niche, you'll find your cookie cutter, you'll kind of like have to, but you do have to dive in. You can't sit on the edges and watch it all go past. Oh, gee, that was really good.
And a good thing for me as well was going to a lot of the seminars and speaking to other people and seeing what they were doing. That was motivational, I suppose, just to see all the sorts of things other people were actually doing. So they've done this course, they're still doing it, they're in the community, and they're taking action on things, and all sorts of all the different strategies all the different people are doing is I liked it.
Yeah, awesome, man. So how do your parents feel now after kind of you quit uni, you dropped out, you're like, I'm not going to do that, how do they view now? Have you kind of made up with the man? I think Mark was okay.
Yeah, I think Dad's more than fine now, because just with how it's sort of grown, with the deals that we have done, all the builds I've done, and how that's, I think he's pretty happy in saying that I'm definitely passionate about it. I think it's the main thing. So I think they'd both be pretty happy, just because they can say I'm enjoying it and it's what I like to do. So
Fantastic.
That's the main thing, isn't it? So as long as you enjoy it, that's the main thing. I feel
Absolutely.
like.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. If you enjoy it, if you get it, you know, if you're putting something into it, you're getting something out of it, and you're passionate about it, then yeah, great. And it's providing some fantastic kind of like places for people to live, in combination with those people who are actually going, you know what, I can actually then that can help me live with the cash flow coming in as well. So there's multiple benefits in and
Oh,
doing that.
and that's how we like to structure things. Everything's got to be a win-win for every party involved.
Yeah. Oh, nice one, man. Nice one. Now, just a couple of questions. I think Sarasa was saying, do you do a project management course, or did you do a project?
No, I didn't, but I guess a mentor or slash business partner for about a year that was had a project management background. I had done a lot of big jobs around Victoria. But that being said, like there's a lot of what he told me that I don't utilize. I guess like for him, he was very much a very spreadsheet focused, very I don't know the right word. But it's a different style of project management. For me, it's more about managing the people. If that makes sense. Obviously, for the stack up numbers wise, but it's more this person. I know which person does which task and things like that. I think I'm.
Okay. Now we've got a question here. Shoot, we've got another question here from Facebook actually, and it says, you didn't know too much about rooming houses when you first started, but now you know more about rooming houses now. Was that the case? Is that
Yeah, well, I mean, all I really all, so I was doing the property management for Dad for while I was studying as well. So I was doing it part time for a lot of his rooming houses that he's managing. So I was on the ground. I was the foot soldier, I guess. But all I knew about rooming houses and pretty much all we'd done, all that Dad was managing then was really just converted stuff in lower socio areas.
So you took a totally different approach.
Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you okay. Still coming through okay. Yep, everything's still good.
Yeah, so like I guess it was just the knowledge I had around it was that, I mean, you know, there's going to be people living in the rooms. They're going to give you this much rent per week, but I didn't know what the outgoings were. But you know, in terms of like building class information or planning information or anything like that, I had pretty much no knowledge. I just had a lot of knowledge around the management side of things. But
Okay.
then obviously I spent a lot of time learning, learning the planning and the building side of things. So I'd say I'm quite up there in terms of knowledge.
Now, one other question. Are you a platinum student?
No, I'm not a platinum student. I've heard a lot of good things about it, but no, I'm not a platinum student.
Okay, great. That's for Sarasa. Yeah, awesome. Stuart, I think we've kind of wrapped up. We've kind of been pretty much on the hour. Is there anything else that you're thinking would actually, you know what? Any parting kind of viewpoints that you would like to share as a consequence of what you've done and what you've achieved, and any kind of insights you want to share with the community?
I mean, I guess like we said before, it's about taking action. That's probably the biggest thing. Just you have to take action, but I also think with how I did things, you know, I took pretty much a year before I started doing anything. I think that's important too, is to find what you want to do, get your head right, and then take action. So don't rush into things. Don't take action first. Line everything up, then take action. But, I don't know, it's a balance, isn't it? Don't take too long lining things up. Not everything's going to be perfect at the same time. So I don't know. I don't know. I guess I don't really have anything to say.
Yes, you seem to be kind of like just, you know, kind of got yourself very well set up. And I love your kind of like your approach. It's a little bit casual, but it's also formal. It's nice.
Yeah,
Nice, man.
absolutely.
And it's and look, the results are the other, you know, the results are there. You know, you've
Yeah.
got the runs on the board. You've proven yourself, and you've clearly done really, really well. So, mate, well done, well done.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, awesome. And look, thank you so much. I really want to thank you for taking the time out to share, so we could kind of like do a little bit of unraveling about what you've been doing, and how you've utilized the training and the community and the experience and everything that's involved with that DIMTA provides, and share what you're doing, because that I always think that it's always insightful, it's always inspirational, it's always a little bit different to go, oh wow, you're doing it in this way. I haven't heard
Yeah.
someone utilize, this training or do something in this way. It's a little bit different. And the real objective and goal of these success shows that we've got going on is to kind of give you that and share that with others, so that everyone in the community can go, you know what? That kind of like that's the kind of thing I need. I needed to hear this, I needed to learn that, and get a bit of motivation to get out there and do it yourself and take action, exactly what you've said, Stuart. So mate, thank you.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolute pleasure, absolute pleasure. And what have we got here? Thanks so much for sharing your experience from Sarasa. Eugene, thanks so much for sharing, Stuart. It's fantastic to hear all of your decisive action and self-direction. And self-direction.
Thanks.
So, yeah, awesome. So, look, thanks everyone for joining. That's going to wrap up the session for today. Have a fantastic Friday afternoon. And remember, we will be doing these on a regular basis. We've done, I don't know what episode we're up to at the moment, but we're probably in about the 20 something episode that we've done with a different student with an individual and unique perspective on the community and how they've utilized it for their own success in their own lives, in order to give you a bit of an insight to inspire you to get out there and do the same. So, thank you so much for joining us. We'll end off there and end off onto Facebook as well. We did get a couple of questions, and sorry about the little technical. I think there was a little bit of a couple of technical things there. Looks like we've carried through okay.
Yeah, we got there at the end.
Got there in the end, exactly. Like some of those deals, hey? All right, we're going to end off now. All the best.
Thanks.
Do well, and we'll catch you next week as well. All right. See you now. Bye. Bye.